It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Calm and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Del Calm.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
Brendan, I know that you are bursting at the seams, kid in a candy store, cannot wait to get to through the gates of Loftus on Saturday. It's going to be blue on blue. It's two teams pitted against each other who have felt the blues in this competition as well. Of course, the semifinals of the URC this weekend. The Bulls deservedly in a semifinal at home against Leinster, a team that is on the hunt for an elusive trophy. They haven't won one since 2021.
Yeah, it's quite a bizarre stat. They're probably the team that dominates the competitions the most. And but four European Cup finals in 6 years lost and three in a row. Two URC semi-finals lost. So there's a bit of a chip on the shoulder for them. But yeah, talking about Loftus, you say, I've been around Loftus so long that you sort of come to appreciate the big games. And nowadays you don't see big crowds for too many games in most places in this country. So, when you see a big crowd coming, and hopefully we're going to have a big crowd on Saturday, it should be good. And Leinster are definitely a team to take seriously. And so it's quite an intriguing battle. Yeah, just how good are the Bulls? I suppose we'll find out on Saturday.
Yeah, I also probably need to point out to our listeners that you're wearing a blue sweatshirt. So clearly that's been your sort of build-up theme for the week. I think you're right, there will be a big crowd. I mean, I can't see any reason why Bulls fans won't go to Loftus in huge numbers on Saturday. It's very much a blue-chip fixture as well. I think Leinster, by all accounts, I think if you were to hold an opinion poll through all the territories of the URC, most people will say that they are the best team in the competition. They've certainly been just about the most consistent if you look at the league stages of the URC. If you look at their form in Champions Cup as well, they are sort of serial finalists. So they're a very difficult team to put down, very consistent, but the silverware is or has eluded them. Can the Bulls halt them this week, though? Because they've obviously smarting from that loss, another loss in the final of the Champions Cup, this time against Toulouse. And obviously now their focus is the URC. So they know they have fallen short. They probably need to ask themselves why they fell short again, whether the way they deploy resources across those two competitions has anything to do with it. But they'll be desperate for a trophy now.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think you ask, can the Bulls do it? Well, there's very few teams. Let's start off with that. There's very few teams that come to Loftus and dominate the Bulls. Munster did earlier this year, and they're one of the few. The Bulls' record against European teams since the start of the URC, it's the only fixture they've lost against was against Munster. Of course, they've never played a full-strength Leinster team in Pretoria. And Leinster's brought out a bunch of youngsters every time they've come out to South Africa. So, yeah, there's a couple of things there. One, that could go back and hurt Leinster a bit. The fact that they haven't been to Loftus to altitude with all their players. But, geez, I mean, I'll quote you some stats here. I was looking at the team that played against Glasgow had 1,433 caps in their starting lineup and 1,018 caps on their bench. I mean, that's almost 2,500 caps between them just in a match day 23, which is simply mind-blowing, yeah, at this club level. And I don't think the Bulls, their full team probably even has close to 1,000 caps. So, there's definitely a big gulf in terms of experience. And that's not even counting the international caps that they have. And then you think that they're going to bring back two experienced players, Jack Conan and Gary Ringrose, who've each of them got over 100 caps for Leinster and plus 50-odd tests each. Certainly not a side on paper, at least, that you would say would lose to any team. Unless the team's called Toulouse, I suppose. But there's very few teams that beat Leinster when they in that form, and they have this amazing ability to keep the ball and put you under pressure through the phases, quick ruck ball. The Bulls, I think the one area they have to worry about is that they've leaked a lot of points. They score a lot of points, but they leak a lot of points. And part of the problem they have is where they've scored points in the last couple of months has very much been through their wingers. Kurti Arendse is the one player that sort of lifts them. And against Benetton, the one thing that was really noticeable is when he went off the field, the whole team sort of shrugged. It's almost like there was a dip in sort of like the shoulders of all the players. And you can see he's one of those players that really lifts spirits, and to lose him was a huge thing. So just how much the loss of Kanan Moody and Kurti Arendse, and how much that will be offset by Marcel Coetzee and Marco van Staden returning, is going to be interesting. But it's certainly a big game.
Yeah, a guy like Kurti Arendse is certainly, I mean, he's one of those jack-in-the-box characters. I mean, he will pop up in, I won't say unlikely areas, but wherever he is on or around the ball, things tend to happen. So he is a huge loss, there's no doubt about it. I think obviously with some of the forwards coming back, a guy like Marcel Coetzee does give them a lot of grunt. I think the up front, they should probably just about cancel each other out. And that's why the Bulls will really smart the loss of a player of Kurti Arendse's caliber. And of course, then Kanan Moody as well. So I think their attack certainly, I'm not suggesting it will be blunt, but I don't think it will have the same cutting edge as they would have had those two guys been available.
Yeah, and I think if you look back at the game that they played in Dublin earlier this year, the Bulls held. They were pretty good up front. They won quite a few scrum penalties. Were quite dominant up front in the early part of the game. And then in the second half of the game, Leinster brought on this monster bench. I mean, I remember Kieran Healy came on with 275 caps under his name. And, yeah, a bunch of those guys came in. And it wasn't their full-strength squad, to begin with. But they brought on sort of, all this experience in the second half, and that sort of almost turned the tide very quickly against the Bulls, and the scoreline ran away from them. Now, that was in Dublin. There was one or two, if we remember right, there was a couple of decisions there. There was a red card that should have gone against Leinster when Kurti Arendse got tackled by the scrum half as he scored a try, went quite high. The referee said it hit him on the shoulder first, went up. A lot of people after that thought it was a red card. That could have changed the game. But the point is, the Bulls lost quite heavily earlier this year. They know what they're going to face. They know they need to be 10 times better. The two things that worry me is, one, the amount of points that the Bulls leak in a game, because they tend to score a lot and leak a lot. And the other one is just the quality of their bench as opposed to Leinster's. And their bench really needs to take a step up. And particularly I'm thinking of people like Simpiwe Matanzima. The front row players that come on, Akufo-Mavu will make a difference. But across the board, you just wonder if they have the same sort of experience and game breakers that Leinster do have. And it's going to take a superhuman performance in a way, but if you want to win this competition, you've got to do one of those.
No, absolutely. I think it will. I mean, you mentioned the experience in the Leinster ranks, and so game management and temperament are things that they will have in bucket loads. There's no doubt about that. And I take your point about the Bulls scoring a lot of points and then also conceding a lot. Now, ordinarily, and I've been asked this question before, not too bothered by that, because if you have the firepower to outscore the opposition, especially at Loftus, a high-scoring ground, then that's fine. I mean, you obviously then back your attack. However, apart from, I would say, the two top Irish sides, on most good days that might work for you, but against the likes of Leinster and Munster, and as we saw it already against Munster, you need your defense to almost be up to test match standard if you're going to shut those teams out. So I'm expecting certainly a match of test match intensity when it comes to those collisions and the sheer intensity at which those two teams will go at each other.
Yeah, it's such an intriguing battle in so many ways, because if you're the Bulls, you want to use the altitude, you want to play a fast-paced game, you want to try and get the opposition tired, because they only came in on Tuesday. The altitude will be a factor, although Gauteng is rather cold at the moment, and I know Marco Bartomeu said the Benetton coach said that it was definitely a factor that aided them as opposed to the previous time they played at Loftus. But you sort of wonder, don't you almost play into the Leinster's hands by trying to play an expensive game? Then again, if you change your mindset in a playoff game to go for points and build a scoreboard, that can also come back and bite you. So it's a very difficult one to do. I think it's quite funny, and I'd like to hear, but I think I'm going to just, what's been funny to me is how everybody's claiming the underdog tag in this game. We're going to listen to some audio quickly from Jake White, who basically said they don't have a chance against Leinster in everybody's eyes, just given the experience that Leinster had. And we'll be following that up with Robin McBride, the Leinster assistant coach, who found it quite funny that they were seen as, and the Bulls were seen as underdogs in this game, given that they, in McBride's words, they've got 20 internationals, they're playing at altitude in their home ground and have their home fans. So listen to the two clips and make up your own mind. And then, Liam, you can tell me who you think is the underdog.
The one thing that's great about rugby is when you don't play well and you win. That's the nice thing about rugby. When you don't play well and you still get a result. And many teams play really well and still lose. So for me, it's like, let's recover, let's get ready, let's get our bodies right. I mean, it's not going to get any easier now. It could quite easily be Leinster and Munster in two consecutive weekends. You're talking about two of the biggest clubs in the world. I can't now go and think, geez, boys, we're doomed now because this has happened and this has happened and the scrum didn't dominate and we haven't got a winger who's out or lost another winger. I mean, the interesting thing is 160 minutes left of rugby. And let's be fair, all of you sitting here didn't think Benetton could beat us. There's no one here that thought Benetton could beat us, and they nearly did. So, I mean, the chances are we've probably got no chance against Leinster and no chance against Munster in everyone's eyes. But that's sometimes a nice place to be, because Benetton showed today that if you really play well, you can win a knockout game.
Well, we'll see on, we'll find out on Saturday, but it's obviously a different route that we've taken this season. We failed to reach the final, on previous occasions, so maybe it's good, that we come into a tough place against an informed team full of internationals. So we need to be at our best, and sometimes you can react positively to having to do things the hard way, and hopefully we'll get a good reaction out of the players on Saturday. I would put them down as favourites. Yeah, when you consider the number of internationals in their squad, the proud home record that they've got, they've obviously had a better preparation time than we have with regards to playing a home game after playing Benetton last week. So, I think the odds are stacked in their favour.
Yeah, I think the talk of underdog only applies before the game, doesn't it? I think if you were to jot down both sets of teams, you would probably arrive at the conclusion that Leinster are the favourites, but then you have to then factor in they are away from home, they're at Loftus. There's the travel factor as well. The entire tour party, I think, comprises of 45 people, and they would have arrived here, and I think, in two or three different groups. So for once, I think the South African teams, it's not a South African team complaining about the travel. I'm not suggesting they did, but the travel factor cannot be wished away. I think it's a very real thing.
I was going to Just before you carry on there, Liam, I was just going to say, I found it, I kind of chuckled when I saw the O'Cullen's quotes about the traveling and trying to find 45 plane tickets on a Saturday night and, you know, having a 10-hour layover in Dubai and how terrible all this is and all the Irish media reporting it. And I just thought to myself, geez, but haven't South African sides done that several times this season, you know, without fanfare? And I mean, the Champions Cup was the one that everybody talked about. But, yeah, the rest of the time, they've been doing it up on every single tour. And have never really complained about it. And it's quite interesting to see the shoe on the other foot.
Yeah, and of course there's the slight detour. Well, I say slight, but having to fly through Dubai and then the layover there, it's far from ideal. It really is. So you know they will have that in their legs. There's no doubt. It's also that part of the season where fatigue would normally or naturally be part of the mix. But as we said earlier, I mean, Leinster must be a very driven side. I mean, they, you know, silverware has eluded them for so long. The success they had in the Pro 12 last, the Pro 14, where they won four in a row before the start of the URC, last won the Champions Cup in 2018. They've played in five of the last seven Champions Cup finals. And have won only one. So there has to be a real drive and urgency to make this one count. But it's a tall order. And I think one of the assistant coaches, I think it was Robin McBride, who made the point that maybe it's time for them to do it the hard way. They've had a couple of knockout matches at home previously, but this time they're on the road and now they have to really show their mettle.
Yeah, and being on the road, teams tend to tell you the whole time how it bonds a team and how it can, you know, really get the guys together away from home, away from the distractions of what's normally at home. I'm not sure. They always say that if they don't win, then it's not so great. And sometimes they say it because they want to get away from the pressure at home as well. Not just from their fans, from everything else as well. So it can be a blessing and it can be a curse, but, yeah, I think we're going to have to see who handles the pressure better. And this is a big test for this Bulls team. They've made strides this season. They're the best South African team. They're not quite where they should be. I think they probably do need a couple more seasons with some of those youngsters to really get them to where they need to be. But they've got a good chance. They have home. So prediction time. Yeah. Who are you going to take? I must admit, I'm struggling with this one because My heart says Bulls. My mind says Jacques Nienaber is going to come up with something, and the experience is just going to count too much.
Yeah, what I said earlier in terms of the experience in that Leinster side, the number of players they have in that squad that they are used to playing high pressure matches, not just at club level but also at test level. I think they probably have the proven BMT, let's put it that way. And I think it's up to the Bulls to show that in their ranks, they have sufficient amounts of that as well. So I'm going to lean Leinster, especially if I look back to, and this is not in any way a slight on Benetton, because I thought they were excellent. But if I look at the way the Bulls played against Benetton, a team like Leinster would have probably put them away last week if they played to the same standard.
Yeah. Can't argue there. I think we all want the Bulls to win. We'd be very happy if we're wrong. But it's hard to see Leinster losing this one. And it would take a supreme effort from the Bulls. And they're capable of it. Whether they're capable of it after a long season, we'll have to see. But they certainly have got enough motivation for it. Then the other team that obviously bowed out, the South African team, the DHL Stormers, lost to Glasgow Warriors. It's interesting, there's quite a bit of needle in that other semi-final. Let's maybe just handle that. Munster favourites at home against Glasgow. I thought Glasgow were a bit lucky against the Stormers with a couple of the calls. They certainly got a couple of hometown decisions in that game. Yeah, but saying that, the Stormers were what we've been saying, the Stormers have been the entire season. They've been hit and miss. They do some great things, and then they do some things that are really infuriating. And at the end of the day, that was almost summed up the entire season.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say that was a microcosm of their season. They blew hot and cold. And the point I've been making is for a team called Stormers, they had real difficulty using the wind to their advantage. In fact, in some ways, it kind of counted against them, the way they went about it, where they maybe in the first half should have kept the ball a bit more instead of kicking it. But there were also some fantastic, there were flashes of brilliance, as you've come to expect from the Stormers. But I think on the balance of that game, despite those decisions, in spite of those decisions going in the favour of Glasgow, you'd say on the balance of the game, the home team probably deserved to win. If they just looked a little bit more urgent, they beat the Stormers to the punch at the breakdown a couple of times. And you just sense that, especially also with that crowd that was very much, they made sure they were part of the action just about, that it was a very difficult game for the Stormers to win. And yet they got close. And then in the end, the last few minutes, things ran away from them at the end.
Yeah, I had the feeling that that if that game was played in Cape Town, the result might have been a bit different.
And yeah, sure.
Some of those decisions, like Carl Steyn not even getting a card for taking out Kalant in the air, and Salman Murat's yellow card, they might have gone a bit differently if it was on the other side of the continent. But to me, I mean, I think the Glasgow deserved to win. And the bottom line is, in this competition, has shown us again and again, that if you want to go far, you need home ground advantage. And I think the Stormers, the game against the Ospreys was probably the one that cost them the most. They should have won that one. And unfortunately, that's the way it rolls. You're not going to get good decisions all the time away from home. And when the crowd's involved, and it's very easy for a referee to see it a bit differently. And it's not saying that they're doing it wrong. It's just they go with their feeling of the game. And yeah, in a hostile environment away from home, that very easily could go against you. Interestingly, though, now, the Munster, intriguing game there, because Munster won the quarterfinal last year.
They won at Glasgow.
Yeah, and they won the pool game, the league game this year. But in that league game, although they won quite handily, I mean, Glasgow scored, I think it was 4 or 5 more tries there. So Glasgow's maul is probably the best in the competition at the moment, and it could be Munster's kryptonite.
And you'd think Munster is a team that usually, when it comes to a close combat, battle at close quarters, is a team that will mix it with anybody in the competition. And yet somehow Glasgow found a way of breaching their defences. So that certainly will be an intriguing part of the game, there's no doubt. But we also know that Glasgow have a few tricks up their sleeve. I mean, they're very much a ball-in-hand type of team. So apart from the forwards that can rumble, they can certainly also use the width of the field. But if you want a team to play knockout rugby, if you're looking for a team to play knockout rugby and keep their shape and play to their own strengths and just make it as difficult as possible for the opposition, then Munster has to be right up there. So they're going to be a very difficult side to beat, you know.
Yeah, they are. And I mean, they're on this run at the moment. And I mean, they've shown since they played at Loftus, they showed they're very difficult to beat. And they are a side that you would expect at home to put it through. But also an intriguing one, apparently a bit of bad blood between the two sides. I've been reading in some of the overseas press, but I wouldn't have thought it. It's going to be an interesting game either way. And we're certainly going to be entertained this weekend.
Absolutely. I just want to add a quick word on the Stormers and their exit. I know a lot of Stormers fans would have been very disappointed with the defeat and also maybe how the season has gone. But I think they've got a lot to look forward to next season, because they are losing a few players, but not high-profile players necessarily, but they've got a few biggish names coming in. And I think they will be much better for it next season. I think they have a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, I think so as well. I must admit, they've got a lot of depth there, and the players coming through, also the youngsters coming through, are pretty decent against the Stormers. So it's going to be an interesting season because I think everybody's looking a bit better next season, well, most of the teams as such, and yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they have. But since we're talking about looking better and looking interesting, there was a Springbok squad announced. Of course, a squad without Japanese-based players there. A squad without European-based players. A squad without Vodacom Bulls players as well. And a squad of 35. And a lot of interesting calls there. Not least the fact that Edwell van der Merwe made it finally. But, I mean, there's quite a few injuries on the wing in the back three, and the fact that Mornay van der Berg was selected as scrum off. So a couple of lines got in that made a couple of people happy. And as you hear just now, we've got a chat with Ivan van Rooyen, which we'll go to, which he also talks about the success they had in getting guys selected for the box squad. But out of all those players that were selected, that we've all seen the squad by now, is there anybody that you think might make their debut?
That's a tricky one. I'd say Siya Mosuku probably has a fair chance, but then you need to also consider the last Springbok pecking order. I think if you go on sheer form, he'll be a very difficult man to keep out of the match day 23, and there's no doubt about that. Of course, Andre Pollard is training with the squad, but he's not available to play against Wales, so there certainly is a chance, a decent chance of Siya Mosuku making his debut. You mentioned Edwell van der Merwe earlier. I thought also a well-deserved chance for him. I can't think of a poor game that I've seen him play in the last season and a half. I mean, he's also a very wholehearted player. And a bit like Kurtley Arends, things tend to happen when he's around the ball. So well-deserved there. I felt sorry for a guy like Sanele Nohamba, who's had a very good season, and he had that untimely knock against the Stormers in the Lions League match in Cape Town a few weeks ago. So not sure to what extent that played a role in his omission. But Mornay van der Berg has also been in good nick the last few weeks, and so has Jordan Hendricks. I mean, start of the season, probably not his best form, but in the last month or so, I thought he's been excellent.
Yeah, I've been sort of looking at how many players can come in, and there's easily about a dozen that aren't there either in Europe or with the Bulls. And if you just go by and by say that, I'm not saying that there's going to be a dozen Bulls in the BOC team. I'm saying that there's obviously quite a few players who are invited to the alignment camp, who were, you know, sort of can come into contention. The fact they were invited tells you that they might be in contention, because we don't obviously know what the thoughts of the selectors and Rossi and them are at the moment. But I think a very good squad. A lot of sort of look towards the future. There's definitely a great core of World Cup winners there, although only in that squad, only 11 of the match day 23 from the World Cup final in that squad.
Only 11. Yes. I thought they were, yeah. But I mean, 11 is still, it's not a bad number. I mean, that gives you more than the spine of the team. Not that everybody will necessarily play, but there should be enough there, you would think, in terms of experience, and let the younger guys sort of fill in around them. I mean, ideally, that's what you want anyway.
Yeah, I'm just going to run through here, and you can just jump in if you want. I'm going to go through. I made a nice little table here, which obviously you can't hear on
the airwaves. I didn't know you went to good work.
Fullback selected Kieran Horn, who's deserved it. He's been very good this season. And Apalele Fassi also won a play in form. Vili Leroux not available. Injured Damian Willemsen. So that's it, fullback. Wings, Chesham Colby, Makazole Mapimpi, and Edwell van der Merwe selected. Two injured players, Kurtley and Kanan, although Cheslin is now also injured. We're not 100% sure. The only player who missed out, who was at the alignment camps, was Suleiman Hartsenberg, and I think he's probably waiting in the wings somewhere. midfielders, Damien Delenda, Andre Estes, and Ethan Hooker, Jesse Krill. Ethan Hooker's obviously looking towards the future, especially with the Kanye Arm and Henke van Wijk not available. But it's interesting, David Krill not coming anywhere near there, which he's been one of the form players, but he wasn't invited to the Bokke lineman caps. So probably they feel they have enough there anyway. Just know out there, Jesse can also play wing, and we might actually see him as an outside chance playing wing again, depending on how they're looking at this Welsh game.
Yeah, given those injuries now.
Yeah. Flavs, five Flavs, and you mentioned Sasha Jordan, Mani Lebok, Sia Masuku, Andre Pollard. That's obviously looking towards Andre's successor. They obviously feel they need to, in my mind, they need to obviously look long-term towards the next World Cup and start working with a 10 that they feel can do the same job that Andre does. And also, it's a challenge to Mani Lebok there. So that's interesting. Scrum-offs, Faf, Mornay, Van den Berg, and Grant Williams. Probably see Faf and Grant going against Wales. Ambrose Papier is obviously the one player invited to the camp who's in very good form, but is not available.
Sparkling form.
Yeah, and Kobus Reinach, the other one, is not there. He's also in France, not available. Jaden Hendricks is injured. And then the two players who didn't make it, as you said, we don't know if Sanele Nohamba was excluded because of an injury or whether he was just in a situation where he wasn't selected. And the other one is Herschel Jantjies, whose Springbok career seems to be, you know, he missed the World Cup squad. It almost seems like he's out of sight, out of mind at the moment.
Yeah, he's had a half-decent season, but also still not the Herschel Jantjies that shot to prominence, when was it, 2018?
Yeah. Now, just looking at loose forwards quickly, those selected, Pepsi Buthelezi, Ben Jason Dixon, both of them had great seasons. And then the tried and tested Peter Steph de Toy and Quagga Smith, and Evan Roos, who's also been in great form for the Stormers. Jasper Visser is not available, suspension. Marco van Staden was injured. Cameron Honeycomb with the Bulls. Peter Gomedi, who's now joined them since. Sia Kulisi, who obviously is within France. And Elric Lowe, those are the players not available because of either European or their clubs are still playing. Injured Dion Ferry, and the two players invited to the camps that didn't make it, Ron Fent and Frankie Hall. Thoughts on these forwards there?
Yeah, look, I think that's going to be a key battleground, especially against Ireland. And it'll be interesting to see how they shape the bag, not ball, the pack against Wales with a view to the Ireland test, because you may want some continuity going into that test series. I mean, it's not like we're short of loose forwards. It's just a question of just finding the right combination. So as much as the Wales test is the first priority, getting that team and getting the back row to gel is something that will be a high priority. Obviously, I mean, if somebody that Sia Kulisi will be back for the Ireland series, so that box will be ticked. There's no question about that. But then obviously a new number eight will have to be found.
Okay, now let's move to the locks. And this is one that's going to be very interesting because, yeah, there's a bunch of injuries and players not available. So if you look at the selected. They only selected three locks. Eben Etzebeth, Franco Mostert, and Salman Murat. And I could see Eben and Franco Mostert so playing, you know, the tests against Wales at least and probably Ireland. Then you have players not available. Erkie Sneijman, who I think will come into the mix as well for the Ireland games. Ruan Nokia and Marvin Uri. I don't know if Marvin's still actually in the picture. We haven't heard much about him in the talk.
We haven't.
And he's also in France, so he's anyway not available at this moment. And then the two injured players, Lurt de Jager and John Klein. John Klein, obviously at the World Cup. Lurt's been off for a while. He went back to Japan, played a couple of games, and then has been injured again. So not quite sure their status.
What was his latest knock?
Geez, I don't even know myself. I just heard that he was injured again. I was quite surprised. I thought he'd be sort of slowly on his way back.
He was playing early in the year, and he was slowly. I remember interviewing him, and he was talking about slowly building his fitness, and he was doing just fine there. But I don't know the nature of his latest knock, whether it's just a hangover from last year.
Yeah, and then I think by the time this pod probably comes out, we'll probably get, because we've got a press conference with Rossi later this week, which we'll have probably some clarity on that. We'll find out some. And then the one player I thought was unlucky not to be called up, who was pretty in the Springbok alignment camp frame, Ruben van Heerden, who's been a rock for the Stormers, probably their best forward this entire year. So he's been a bit unlucky. Felt a bit for him. But interesting, they have three locks. I think Salman will probably be on the bench going into Wales, but Erke will probably come in. But still, they probably need a bit more depth than that.
They do. But of course, there is the knowledge that for Ireland, there will be at least two other names added to that. Oddly enough, I think it's maybe even a game where you could start Salman. We haven't seen him that much. I mean, he's been a Bok now for a few years, but he doesn't have too many caps under his belt. So it potentially is a game where, if it's a young Wales team, so this may be the kind of occasion where you unleash him, keep one of the other two back. But as it stands, yeah, you're right. I mean, having only three locks is cutting it a bit fine.
Yeah, of course, there is the caveat that someone like Peter Steph de Toit could always play lock. Evan Rus could always play rock. Ben Jason Dixon probably can play lock as well, if you want to. But there's probably enough other names there to call up somebody if they need somebody. In an emergency, and if the Bulls do go out, Ron or Keir becomes available. And if Munster go out, Arkie Snyman becomes available. So, it's going to be interesting just to watch that one. Four hookers. Also interesting because Malcolm Marks hasn't played. He's back there. Bongi Mbonambi, who's probably a captaincy candidate as well. Joseph Dweba, who's been around the squad for quite a while now. And Andre Hiku-Fenter, who's the youngster amongst them. Not available, that was invited to the Bok alignment camp, was Johan Kroblar and Jan-Hendrik Wessels. I think Krobby's is probably between him and Andre Hiku-Fenter for whoever they're going to looking towards the future. And then Marnus van der Merwe was the other player invited to the from the Free State, although I don't think any of us expected him to make anywhere close to the Bok team when it was finally announced. So that's the hookers.
You know what I find funny there, or a little ironic, is that we've got all these hookers in the build-up to a test against a very young and inexperienced Wales team, and we barely had a hooker available for the World Cup final.
Dion Ferrie and Marco van Staden, the two so-called hookers in the World Cup, obviously weren't there. And Bongi's still there. But yeah, you're right. That was a talking point there. And suddenly we've got all these other hookers. Interestingly, that they didn't take any of them up. Obviously, it worked for them. So in retrospect,
it worked, it worked just. But it worked.
And then go quickly through the props. I'll do both tight head and Nuset. Tight heads, Vincent Koch, Frans Malherbe. Nieting for sure. Nieting has won the most penalties of any tight head in the competition. And then you have two very good tight heads that weren't available, Trevor Niakane and Wilco Lowe, who's obviously with the Bulls at the moment. And then Lucet Ntuku Mchunu and Oxen Che. Not available, Gerard Steenkamp. Injured Stephen Kitsoff, and the man missing out was Boss, probably man of the final in that premiership final that they lost, Thomas de Toy, who's had an unbelievable season in the UK. But those are the props there. There's more than enough to choose for, and who do you leave out there?
Absolutely. We are so well stocked there. It's unbelievable. You could literally throw those names into a hat for the Wales game, certainly. Throw those names into a hat and, take out two and it'll be good enough to go. Obviously, once Ireland arrives, the picture changes and you'd have to go with the more tried and tested, and you'll probably end up with something resembling what we saw at the World Cup and certainly what we saw in the final. It'll be interesting to see what, there are some names that are in that Bok squad where we don't know what the fitness levels are like. But I mean, they will go with the tried and tested against Ireland. There's no question about that.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting. I'd like to see Nathan Fouché get his cap. We've had him on the pod. He's a great player and he's had a great season. Thoroughly deserves it. I think Wilco Lowe would be another one who I think we'd like to see. It's quite funny. I actually wrote about this today. Jake White, we asked him what was the difference in the scrum in the last sort of season, and his answer was quite clearly Wilco. And he said, it's not that everybody else is so bad. In fact, he said, Wilco, it's 140 kilograms of Afrikaner beersvleis, was his words. Mm. And he says, it's not that everybody else is, you know, was bad before him. He said, Wilco is just one of those guys, he loves scrumming. And when you do a scrumming session, he literally scrums against everybody. You have to literally yank him out of the scrumming session because he keeps on changing the loose head props that scrum against him. And that improves the loose head props. And he says that's one of the things why the Bulls scrum has improved. So it's interesting. He's definitely a guy I'd hope to see in the Springbok jersey again. And I'm sure, you know, the way they played against, especially against the Sharks, and what we'll see probably this weekend against Leinster if he does well, I'm sure that'll be noticed by the Bok coaching team.
Yeah, look, Wilco has I think he started out in 2017 with the Boks under Alistair Coetzee. Then wasn't selected for a while, but it's not like he became a bad prop. Just other guys got an opportunity. So I've got absolutely no doubt in them in his ability. I mean, if you just look at him, you just don't get the impression he's going to go backwards ever.
Not at all. I mean, I must admit, it's one of those things that we even get surprised that you stand next to a player at practice and you realize, geez, this is a big chunk of beef, this you're standing next to. And, I mean, it happens when you stand next to somebody like Malcolm Marks, like Bongi, you just realize, geez, you have to face these guys at full speed or in a scrum. Yeah, this is a tough ask for any player. But that's what makes this whole game so wonderful. That's the Springbok squad. I think we'll be talking next week about the Wales game in a bit more detail, because we'll, and obviously the URC final as well. But before we leave you, you were indisposed this morning, so I had a chat to Ivan van Rooyen, Cash, and after we spoke last week, we said we'd put some tough questions to him. So I think I did. I hope I did. He wasn't always comfortable with all the questions, but we had a great chat. And have a listen, and then we'll say goodbye, and we'll chat to you next week, and we'll go out with Cash talking about the season and his plans for next season.
We'll chat next week.
Cheers. Well, we're joined today by Cash van Rooyen, the Lions coach, now looking a bit ahead towards the Currie Cup. Thought you'd be on holiday, Cash. Welcome to the pod.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me. Season not over yet, not done yet. Involved with the Currie Cup, making sure that we get good alignment. And obviously, because of our system, we're backing from within. So there's a nice bunch of young crops coming through. So making sure that we get off to a good start.
Before we go into the URC, so looking back at that, just talk about the Currie Cup. How frustrating has it been for you guys from a coaching point of view, just to have to obviously prepare, not knowing what the competition is, having to give those players 8 weeks off sort of while you're still playing in another competition? I mean, it's not the ideal situation for any coach.
Yeah, I think that the timing of it makes it difficult. I think one can agree that you got to manage the players and they can't play continuous. So I think that the fight around the rest is worthwhile. I do think that the resolution of us managing it in conjunction with all the relevant parties is good. For us, it is we've got a group that hasn't really played that much. We're desperate to get them playing in the Currie Cup. We're desperate for them to get playing, just to try and play the odd 40, 50, 60, 80 minutes. It's not great for development either. So we were confident that the Currie Cup would happen. Like I said, the timing of it could have changed. But, we're prepping, and we have prepped the last 2-3 weeks for it to happen for us the 5th of July, and thankfully it does.
Yeah, I think we all wish a global season. I think we've spoken about that a lot on this podcast as well. But I mean, it's a strange thing for you as a coach, because on the one hand, you've got players who are playing almost too much in the URC. You've got to manage their game time, obviously, in that competition. But then it comes to the backup players. And I know you have to rotate squads, but and you try to do that during the season. But with the pressures of winning and all those sort of things, you often don't get to play as many players, and there's no backup competition. So at the moment, I mean, if you sort of on those fringes, those players on the fringe, they don't get as enough game time, and especially if you're a youngster coming through, there's not that much game time if you're over the age of 21 and you're not playing in an age-level competition.
Yeah, I think that's the challenge we have to balance all of that with getting experience, because like you've mentioned, there isn't, if I can refer to the old times, there isn't a Vodacom Cup or different competitions for that to happen. So we've got a couple of players over 1,000 minutes and we've got a couple of players under 200 minutes. And when, like you've mentioned, because of our model, that players tend to be between 20 and 24 years old, where if you refer back to the late 90s and early 2000s, even if you were contracted, you played Lions under 19, Lions under 21, two seasons, probably a bit of club rugby in between, probably Vodacom Cup if you're good enough. So you're probably in that first 4 years of becoming professional, you probably played about 50 rugby games. Where if you look at the current system, and the challenge would be, I think there's under 22 and under 23 players that probably haven't played 15 games in 3 years. So closing that gap and that void as quick as possible with getting experience, but also, like you say, we're in the business of winning. So I think that's the balance.
And let's get up to the URC season then. In looking at the URC season now, maybe it's, if you have to look back now, how would you describe it before I start peppering you with questions? How would you say the season? Would you consider it a success? Would you feel that the fact that you missed out the playoffs is not a success? Where do you see it?
Yeah, I think we were pretty up and open about it, that we wanted to reach the top eight. That was a goal from the boardroom to the backroom staff to all the players. Missing it out with 1 point or one win, whatever you want to call it. We were the same points as Ospreys. They had one more win. Then you go to small margins. Away at Loftus, I felt we were good enough. Maybe one or two decisions plus one or two decisions from our side, execution-wise. Even the last game, Stormers, I felt we were in the game. Again, one or two decisions from our side in terms of system plus, I don't want to say official, but let's call it one or two decisions. Then I think we've been outplayed in two games, I think, in my opinion. Bulls at home, they were better than us, and probably Munster at home for us as well. So I think all the other games, 14 bonus points, 6 losing bonus points. So we almost there. Consistency definitely is better. But a lot of good lessons from those two games. After the Bulls game, we really had an honest review that Monday around way of play, mindset, where are we, what are we, what is our DNA, what's our point of difference, and thankfully that changed a bit in the last 6 games.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you talk about consistency. That's a word that's been bandied about the whole season, and you've heard it a lot, and I'm sure you're probably tired of hearing it, but that has probably been the one failing of the team, is that backing up some of those big performances. I'm just thinking of the one week in particular, the Connacht week, where you guys won with 14 men, incredible performance, probably close to your performance of the season, other than that and the other 14-man performance against Glasgow. But the week after that, almost fell flat again, and it felt like same thing there at Loftus. Good game at Loftus, came back for the return game, and obviously not your guys' best game by a country mile, but just keeping those sort of standards up. And is there any reason for it? Have you pinpointed? I know it's probably something you guys rack your brains about quite a bit.
Yeah, if I can get a little bit specific around it, I think the Connacht performance, we probably didn't realize how much it took out of the guys physically. Mm-hmm. And in review, I probably could have rotated the squad a little bit for the next weekend. I felt we were really flat that first 40 minutes. then obviously one or two words halftime plus actions from our side, and we were a lot better that second half. But I think I'll stick my hand up for that one definitely. If I go to the Bulls, I think it was almost, and that's part of the discussion we had that Monday, it's almost that fear of disappointment after coming so close at Loftus, that fear of pressure and what if and what if not. And I think we broke the shackles a little bit after that Bulls performance. It felt nervous. It felt hesitant. It felt not 110% with intensity. Not intent. The intent was there, but that punch and intensity. And credit to the Bulls. I think we gave them a big enough scare to really put up their 1% difference from their side as well. If you go to the Munster game, for instance, I just felt, I don't think there was a drop of performance. I just felt that they were tactically really good against us, and they hindered us from getting to our strengths.
So I suppose one of the criticisms that could be leveled against you, your team, is the fact that a lot of times you punch above the weight if you consider the, and just in terms of player budgets, and where you guys don't, obviously they have some of the same player budgets as some of the franchises in South Africa, like the Sharks, for instance. That's just a fact. But is there that ambition, though? Because it seems at times from the outside, and I say, that's why I'm putting the question, is because from the outside, it seems almost as if the Lions, through their contracting and et cetera, are almost content to be that side on the fringes, not the Leinster, if I can put it that way.
I think that's an ironic comparison, the Leinster one. I think what Leinster is doing currently really well is they're probably buying in two or three guys that they feel will make a world-class difference from them. But I think the strength of their system is 99% of that comes from within. Yes, our model is slightly different. We're currently not going to buy 5 superstars or 6 superstars. Part of the, call it inconsistency or game management that's developing from us, is we ended off the season with a 22-year-old 5-lock. Frank is experienced now, but he's also still something like 25. Sanele Krappi, 24, 5, 6. Kewan Horn, 22, 23. Jordan, 22, 23. So because we're young, we probably can look like we're a little bit inconsistent, and game management is one of the areas that we're developing and growing. But we also believe, and I don't want to compare to the previous generation, but I think it is fair. The model back then was back from within. And that system provided 16 Springboks, with some of them are double World Cup winners like Malcolm and Quagga and Sos and Fuff and all of them. So I don't want to say we want to replicate that, but we realized in COVID that to stay head above water, to be honest, we have to almost start over, start within, pick young to hopefully 2-3 seasons later have where we feel we currently 60% of the group is between 23 and 26, and they've got between 40 and 60 ERC caps. So it's time for us to jump on the mattress and really go forward next year, because when you have 50% of your group at 50-plus caps, then inexperience can't be the excuse. Yes, they're all still relatively young. Just if you take the Bulls currently, which is obviously the number one team in South Africa by Shield winners and lock position, Veli Leroux is a Springbok 15, Johan Huisen is a Springbok 10, also loads of experience. Ambrose is a Springbok. Gavin and Anakom had a great season, but between him and Pilo, great young players coming through. They'll probably both be Springboks within the next year, I would think. Ronald Keir is a Springbok. Akker van der Merwe is a Springbok. So I think span-wise, yes, someone like the Bulls is definitely more experienced, but hopefully that's where we can be within the next 2 years.
Yeah, saying that, I mean, what I meant by the model as well, I mean, the Sharks obviously looking for Galacticos and they go buy big names and, you know, big budget players. The Bulls have sort of done it a bit differently. They've sort of tried to bring through a couple of youngsters, obviously very talented youngsters, while also buying up experience, older experienced players to come back. Whereas you guys, I mean, you've stuck with that junior group that did so well in the under-21s and under-20s or under-21s that won that competition. And those guys are coming through, and you've been rewarded with guys like Kewen and going through to Henko being an SAA selection, guys like that coming through. But that's what I meant by the model. Is that the model going forward? Are you going to carry on sort of trying to develop from within? Because obviously we've seen some other big purchases from sides across South Africa, but we haven't heard much from the Lions in terms of recruitment for the coming season.
Yeah, currently that is still our model. This again, we, and well done to Mzwaki and Vessel and everyone involved in the junior system. I think consistency in our junior system is probably the best in South Africa. And again, it's the ability to develop, the ability to coach. So well done to that system. We've got again about 7 really exciting under-21s coming through into our URC squad for next year. All 7 of them should be part of the Curry Cup system. Plus, after the first round, they're top of the log. So because of our successful junior system, we tend to look more there, to develop, to get caps. I'm not saying by that, Brendan, we're not in the market for 1 or 2 guys that we really feel can make a difference. Obviously, something like on-field ability plus off-field influence plus price do play a role there.
Yeah, and I know, look, I mean, the market is, there are obviously people around there, not just the European market that's got big money, but there are obviously players in South Africa like the Sharks who go and snap up these players, which brings me, to the question of, it's all good and well having these players there, but, I mean, you've lost Jordan or you're losing Jordan, I'm not sure if you can maybe just fill us in what's happening there. You're losing Manu as well to the Sharks. And, yeah, as these guys develop, I'm sure a bunch of these big players are going to come hunting for these players as well. Are you going to be able to keep them?
Let me say this, and it's not a dig against the Sharks. I mean, I get along well with that system. I don't think we should lose players to other local franchises. That's speaking to us. The ability to keep them is important. The willingness to keep them is important. We were in the race, in the fight with that. Unfortunately for us, the decision was for them. Yes, we have to keep them. I mean, you can't just develop and lose the whole time, because then you start over. And I think that was part of the initial decision to say, okay, here's a group. Let's see how many of them we can retain, we can sign. Let's get going with them, and hopefully 3 or 4 years from that decision, we can bear the fruits.
I was on mute there for a second. Just on that, just maybe Jordan, let's just clarify that. What's the situation there? Because he wasn't among that group of players that you guys said goodbye to the other day. I was told his contract ends in December. The Sharks believe he's coming there on the 1st of July. I don't know what you can talk to. I know you don't handle the contracting as such as coach, but maybe you can just tell us what the clarity is there.
There is talks happening in the background. That's all I can say now. So it's in that transition period where there's negotiations, there's ifs and buts. So that's what I can say.
And just to replace, if he does go and Manu's obviously gone, have you got replacements lined up? I know you said the juniors. And then plus, I suppose the other question comes, I mean, we had a chat last week with Jake just after a press conference, and they obviously letting a lot of their juniors go, a couple of SA under 20 players there, SA schools players. Are you guys in the market for those type of players as well?
Yes, we are. It hasn't been officially announced who we signed on, but again, it's not, you know, I mean, I'll say this, it's not 10 or 15 new guys. We did get one of the loose forwards from the Bull system. There's a loose forward from the Cheetah system. So that's the 2 forwards, 2 loose forwards. We are signing a additional outside back, plus additional playmaker. But again, saying that, losing Jordan, which I think the second part of the season was unbelievable for us, because of the ability to play 12 or 10. I think the whole world have seen the excitement of a possible Sanele at 10. So that's something that we can always revert back to. But also believe it's time for Giovanni Lombard and Kate Voliter to really come through. Unfortunately, both of them has been sidelines for about 2 years with ACL knee injuries. Both is training without constraints. Both is getting a lot better in terms of sharpness and readiness. So I think this Currie Cup is going to be big for both of them.
Yeah, and just on that, I mean, with the limitations you guys have in terms of player budgets, and that, are you seeing the market, should I say, is maybe getting a bit better in terms of we spoke to Frans Steyn about this, and he was quite keen to have younger players go play elsewhere and come back to the Cheetahs at a later stage and do those sort of agreements with unions. Are you seeing that willingness a bit more than we in the past? I mean, when you think back a couple of years, I mean, that Lions team you were talking about was built on a lot of the ex-Bulls players that couldn't stay there and eventually got fed up and left and went across the XK. But there was always this sort of hindrance of rather let a guy train the whole time and not play than let him go somewhere else and play. Are you seeing that changing a bit now?
Probably. I think there's a couple of keys around it. I think a consistent schedule in terms of tournaments will be important for that to happen. If, let's say, the SA Cup is a consistent thing with timings and the First Division Currie Cup is consistent with timings, then I do feel there is opportunity to let some of the guys that don't have all that minutes probably go get some minutes and play and keep on developing and keep on assisting with within South Africa, because I do believe that all competitions played should be as competitive as possible. So if I think back again to that, someone like Faf de Klerk was under 19, 20, 21 by us. He went and played two or three seasons at the Pumas, drafted him back into the Super Rugby squad after a year or two, then went back to play Currie Cup there, and then we signed him, and today he's Faf de Klerk that the whole world knows. So yes, I believe that's one model, and again, then back to our model is the identification and accurate identification. I would say that the areas we feel we do need is who is the best under 20, 21, 22 player available. If we need a lock or lock, or we need a 10. So because we don't always buy at the top shelf, who is the Franco Mostert that can come through? Who is Quagga was on our system, so that's different. But Ruan Jans van Rensburg, for instance, moved to us also early. So part of that process from our side is who's the top senior juniors, if I can call it like that, to assist the system.
I'll start closing off now because I don't want to keep you too long. You've obviously got stuff to do. But just in terms of next season, what is there that you need to get you over that hump for the top eight? What do you think, other than the players obviously maturing a bit more, what would be necessary?
I think playing style has to evolve as well, whether it's the attacking system or the defensive system. I think we've changed the way we've played subtly throughout the season, and I think it was quite evident the last six to eight games. For that to happen, we had to change defensively also a little bit. So playing styles probably got evolved a little bit. I think we were significantly better on tour and away from home in playing style. I think we managed to adapt a lot quicker than the year before, even though we got some decent results the year before. And yeah, if you look at our current URC fixtures, I think out of the first 10 games, 8's away from home. So we have to approach that a little bit different, go into the URC competition probably with a broader squad that has played a bit more, speaking to guys playing Currie Cup as well. So yeah, potentially we'll start URC and the first 8 games with guys that's probably played 5 or 6 games to get running into that start.
And then obviously just the goals for next season, top eight, I take it as a given that it has to be a goal next season. And in the Challenge Cup, you've seen what the Sharks have done there as well. Just your goals for those two competitions?
Yeah, obviously top eight would be a massive thing for us. And I think last year and this year showed it, and the Stormers in year one. If you have a home playoff game, the road seems to be a lot easier and a lot more feasible. So whether it's URC or EPCR, see if you can get a home semi-final, EPCR-wise, a home round of 16, home quarterfinal, home semi-final, and then obviously we know the final is away. And URC, if you can get a home quarterfinal, home semi-final, I think anything's possible from there.
Okay, no, thanks for your time, and good luck for the Currie Cup. If you guys have a good season, I think there's a lot of people out there wanting the Lions to succeed, so good luck for that. And it's been a tough year and a long time. I'm sure somewhere you're going to get some rest. Are you going to take at least, I know you're with the Currie Cup now as well, but are you going to get a weekend away at least somewhere?
Yeah, to be honest, I will probably get a week. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll wait for the school holidays, and then I'll take the family just before Currie Cup starts. Probably go a week. They're in the safe hands of Mzwaki and everyone, so nothing, not to worry about that too much. So no, I'll get a week. Looking forward to that, and then it's full storm ahead again.
Last question, just from us. The podcast is called To the Last Drop for a reason. We also, Liam and I, obviously enjoy opening a bottle of red wine every now and again, or whatever. I was just asking you, when you have those moments where you want to celebrate or you want to sort of unwind a bit, what is your poison?
I probably shouldn't say this out loud too much, but my good friends know, whatever you're going to chuck in my glass, I'll probably have a go at it. So I don't mind. For me, it's the friendship around it, the moments around it. Absolutely love a good braai with friends or family. If we do talk wine, don't mind a good blend. Enjoy a Malbec. For me, it's not necessarily the drink or the quality of the drink, but the situation around it. I'm really fond of good family time, of good time with friends. For me, that's how I find my balance. That's how I find my peace. So really enjoy good times with good people.
Okay, great. Evan, thanks for the time. And as I say, enjoy that week off and that time away. And we'll speak to you guys soon, I'm sure. The new season's only like a month or two away, so we're going to probably see you guys pretty soon again. So
fun to see you again. Thanks, Brendan. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.